In the ages after the Pantheon left Azeroth, myriad life forms flourished across the surface of the world. The most savage and cunning were the proto-dragons, who dwelled in the frozen north of Kalimdor. The various proto-dragon species had a wide array of strengths and abilities. Some were gigantic winged beings of incredible fortitude, their spirits tied to the world itself. Others had unknowingly tapped into the latent elemental energies that permeated the newly ordered world. But there was one proto-dragon whose brutality and devastating power overshadowed the rest of his kind. His name was Galakrond, and he was the largest proto-dragon who had ever soared across Azeroth's skies. So mighty was the enormous creature that the beating of his wings could flatten entire forests. Strength, however, was not his only weapon. He possessed a preternatural cunning that made him an exceptional hunter. In time, Galakrond came to dominate the most sought-after hunting grounds in northern Kalimdor. Compelled by an insatiable appetite, he devoured everything in sight. His body swelled to an even greater size, yet nothing could ever sate his cravings. So terrible was this hunger that Galakrond began feasting on other proto-dragons, even the corpses of the dead. Devouring fallen proto-dragons eventually warped Galakrond's mind and body with a necrotic affliction. Misshapen limbs and dozens of eyes sprouted across his gargantuan form. Death energies wafted off of Galakrond's jagged hide, reanimating dead matter. These necrotic powers were infused in Galakrond's victims, and they rose from the dead as mindless abominations. The ranks of Galakrond's wretched minions expanded. Soon, he and his ruined followers terrorized the skies over Kalimdor. The other proto-dragons, fractured by long-standing rivalries, failed to unite against this new threat. Tyr, the mightiest of the Keepers, was the first of his kind to notice the danger posed by Galakrond. He warned his fellow Keepers of what he had seen, but he could not motivate them to act. Though the Keepers had once sworn to protect the world, the war with the old gods and the ordering of Azeroth had sapped their collective strength and willpower. They had become indifferent to the world at large, focused solely on maintaining their vaults and arcane machineries. But Tyr was not deterred by his siblings' apathy. His drive to seek justice and order in the world pushed him forward. Tyr knew that if Galakrond remained unchecked, he would devour all nature, spreading his affliction to the far corners of Azeroth. Thus, the Keeper sought a means to destroy the giant proto-dragon and his minions. Tyr found his answer with 5 of the greatest and most intelligent proto-dragons in existence: Alexstrasza, Neltharion, Malygos, Ysera, and Nazdormu. Nearly all of these creatures hailed from different strains. and each of them displayed unique powers. Even the two sisters, Alexstrasza and Ysera, commanded distinct abilities. The tenacious and kind-hearted Alexstrasza could summon gouts of fire from her maw. The mighty Neltharion possessed incredible strength, and his piercing roar could shatter bone and rock alike. The cunning Malagos could breathe frost, encasing his foes in solid ice. The wise Nazdormu could assail his enemies with blinding storms of coarse sand. The elusive Ysera's breath could debilitate her enemies, sapping their willpower and throwing them into a deep trance. Tyr beseeched the five proto-dragons for aid in thwarting Galakrond. The creatures were initially suspicious of the strange being who had approached them, but they soon vowed to fight by his side. Despite their differences, the five proto-dragons showed a surprising willingness to work as one. Under Tyr's guidance, Alexstrasza and her companions warred with Galakrond and his fetid minions. Their battles raged over the snowy peaks and rocky spires of northern Kalimdor. Initially, Galakrond's jagged hide warded off the attacks of the five proto-dragons. Though disheartened by their enemy's resilience, Alexstrasza and her allies soon found his weakness. They assaulted Galakrond's many eyes and his soft, vulnerable gullet. By using their powers in harmony and trusting in one another, the five proto-dragons vanquished their gargantuan foe. Galakrond's lifeless husk plummeted to the ground, smashing into the frozen tundra of what would become known as the Dragonblight. The five proto-dragons had won despite all odds, but they had only done so by working together. It was a lesson they would soon not forget. Alexstrasza and the others would carry on this ideal of unity and cooperation for ages to come. Tyr fought alongside the proto-dragons, but Galakrond proved too powerful even for the Keeper of Justice. In one particular battle, the monstrous creature bit off Tyr's iron hand, suffusing him with necrotic energy. Although Tyr survived, his wound would never truly heal. Many years later, Tyr would replace his lost hand with one forged of pure silver. The silver hand would come to symbolize his belief that only through personal sacrifice could one achieve lasting justice. While Tyr and the proto-dragons were battling Galakrond, the other keepers finally emerged from their stupor. Too late, they realized the threat that the corrupted monstrosity posed. They were heartened by the resolve of Tyr's winged allies and ashamed of their own apathy. Tyr, however, never chastised the other keepers. Instead, he convinced them to imbue the five proto-dragons with powers so that they could safeguard the lands of Azeroth. Only Keeper Odin challenged this idea. Though he acknowledged the proto-dragon's heroism, he did not agree that Azeroth's fate should be placed on their shoulders. Odin saw Alexstrasza and her ilk as primitive life forms. Only the mighty Titan Forged could be trusted to protect the world. Odin argued that as prime designate, he had the final decision on how to proceed. Yet Tyr and the other keepers disagreed. Through bravery and self-sacrifice, the proto-dragons had earned the right to act as Azeroth's guardians. Despite Odin's continued protests, the other keepers moved forward with their plans. After the proto-dragons defeated Galakrond, the keepers journeyed to the frozen tundra where the final battle had taken place. Even Ra traveled from the distant south to take part in the great ceremony that was to come. Acting as conduits of their creator's powers, the gathered keepers bestowed the blessings of the pantheon upon each proto-dragon. High Keeper Ra channeled the powers of his creator, Amon-Thul, into the proto-dragon Nazdormu. Of all Amon-Thul's myriad powers, Nazdormu was blessed with a mastery of time itself. Henceforth, Nazdormu became known as the Timeless One, and he held dominion over the interweaving pathways of fate and destiny. The nurturing and ever-merciful Freya called upon her creator, Eanor, to empower the proto-dragon Alexstrasza. Known thereafter as the Lifebinder, Alexstrasza would devote everything she was to the stewardship of the living world. Having proved her courage and compassion in the battles against Galakrond, she was crowned the Dragon Queen and given command over her kind. Freya also beseeched Eanor to bless Alexstrasza's younger sister, the proto-dragon Ysera, with nature's influence. Ysera was charged with keeping watch over the flowering wilds of Azeroth from within the Emerald Dream. Bound to this ethereal realm, she descended into an endless trance and became known thereafter as the Dreamer. Keeper Loken called on his creator Norgannon to endow the proto-dragon Malygos with incredible arcane powers. Henceforth, Malygos would be known as the Spell Weaver. The limitless realms of magic and hidden arcana would be his to share, explore, and protect. Lastly, Keeper Arcadeus asked his creator, Khazgaroth, to bestow some of his vast power upon the indomitable proto-dragon Neltharion. Known afterward as the Earth Warder, Neltharion was given charge over the mountains and deep caverns of the earth. He embodied the strength of the world and served for many long ages as Alexstrasza's greatest friend and confidant. Bristling with the pantheon's energies, the five proto-dragons transformed into immense and graceful creatures. Nazdormu's hide took on a bronze hue like a sea of shimmering golden sand. Alexstrasza's scales turned a deep and vivid shade of red. Sarah's lithe form became a vibrant green to reflect her new connection with nature. Malygos turned an icy blue color, and his very scales radiated potent arcane energies. Neltharion's rough hide became an earthy black. From that day forward, these five extraordinary beings become known as the Dragon Aspects. The Keepers also sought to create a new species to help the Dragon Aspects protect the world. These beings would serve the Aspects as consorts and allies. To this end, the keepers magically altered hundreds of proto-dragon eggs. From them would emerge creatures born in the image of the Aspects. This new race, known as dragons, would form 5 distinct flights: bronze, red, green, blue, and black. Though each of these flights would serve a different dragon aspect, they would all be bound by their duty to protect Azeroth. To strengthen this bond, the keepers forged a grand tower in northern Kalimdor called Wormrest Temple. It would serve as the heart of the dragon's culture, a sanctuary where they could gather and discuss their activities. But above all, Wormrest would stand as a symbol of their unity. The keepers, satisfied with their work, disappeared back inside their lairs, leaving the Aspects to watch over the living creatures of Azeroth. As the other keepers were conducting their ceremony to empower the dragon Aspects, Odin brooded within his halls of Olduar. He was furious that his allies had acted against his wishes, the wishes of the Prime Designate. More than that, Odin believed with all his heart that the dragon Aspects would fail in their charge to safeguard the world. For the good of Azeroth, Odin decided to take matters into his own hands. He would create an elite army of his design, one that he could call on to protect the world should the need ever arise. To fill the ranks of this fighting force, Odin would look to the mighty Vyrkul. He had always admired their innate courage and strength. He saw the Vyrkul, above all other Titan-forged, as the perfect expression of the warrior spirit. Upon returning to Olduar, Tyr and the other keepers demanded that Odin abandon his foolish plans. Yet their words had no effect on the Prime Designate. Odin was single-minded in his focus and unbending in his ideas of what was right. He invited the other keepers to help him create his army. When none stepped forward to join his cause, Odin announced he would pursue this quest without him. Odin secured one of Olduar's wings to act as the base for his new army, to permanently separate it from the rest of the fortress and from the other keepers. He called on the Titan-forged sorceress Helya. Over the ages, Odin had come to see her as his adopted daughter. Helya wove a great spell to encase the keeper's stronghold. Then, focusing all of her power, she ripped the colossal chunk of Olduar from the earth and lifted it into the cloudy skies. In time, this floating citadel would become known as the Halls of Valor. From atop his fortress, Odin bellowed out a proclamation to all Vyrkul. Those who proved their bravery by dying glorious deaths in battle would live again in the Halls of Valor. Their spirits would be transported to the fortress and given mighty new storm-forged bodies. These champions, these Valyar, would serve as Azeroth's foremost guardians. Their deeds would live on in the hearts of all Titan-forged forever after. All that remained was to find a means of ferrying the spirits of the dead to the Halls of Valor. For this, Odin studied the energies that permeated the Shadowlands, The knowledge he gained would allow him to transform some vehicle into spectral beings known as the Valkyr. These wraith-like servants would travel between the Shadowlands and the physical world, guiding the souls of worthy vehicle to the halls of valor. Yet those who became Valkyr would be cursed to live as phantom beings for all eternity. No vehicle volunteered for the grim task of becoming a Valkyr, and thus Odin decided he would create his servants by force. Helya admonished the Keeper for his willingness to turn the Titan Forged into slaves against their will. The argument between her and Odin grew so heated that the two nearly came to blows. In the end, Helya warned that she would return the Halls of Valor to Olduvar if Odin did not change his mind. Odin saw Helya's disobedience as a threat not only to his plans, but to the future safety of Azeroth itself. Blinded by his dreams of what the Halls of Valor could become, he struck out at the sorceress. Odin shattered her physical form and twisted her spirit into the first of the Valkyr. Helya's howls of pain and anger rumbled across the surface of Azeroth and pierced into the very heart of the Shadowlands. This violent transformation would forever darken Helya, but her torment was not finished. Though she loathed Odin for what he had done to her, she found herself compelled to obey his will. Under Odin's command, she set out to transform unwilling Vyrkul into the cursed Valkyr. For ages, Helya and her fellow Valkyr brought the souls of heroic Vyrkul to the Halls of Valor. The Citadel became filled with storm-infused Valyar. Odin trained and empowered each of these warriors. He had no remorse for breaking from the Keepers, or for transforming Helya into the first Valkyr. In Odin's mind, everything he had done was for the safety of Azeroth and in honor of the great Pantheon. The Keepers went about their duties on Azeroth, unaware of a new threat that was taking shape in the distant reaches of the Great Dark. Sargeras, having broken all ties with the Pantheon, meditated on the fate of the universe in isolation. His fear that the Void Lords had already corrupted other world souls consumed him. As doubt and despair continued twisting the Titan's every thought, he became more certain than ever that creation itself was fatally flawed. Finally, he concluded that the only way to spare the universe was to purge it in fire. Thus, his grand burning crusade would begin. To accomplish this burning crusade, Sargeras required a vast form of unquenchable rage. He knew of only one place that held such power and potential: Mardum, the Plane of Banishment. Over the ages, the prison had become bloated with fell magic and vengeful demons. Their presence had warped Mardum, transforming it into a realm of nightmare. Torrents of fell energy ceaselessly bombarded the prison's walls, bathing the captive demons in a roiling sea of volatile magic. Sargeras quelled his remaining apprehension and tore the prison asunder, spilling its wrathful denizens into the great dark beyond. The subsequent explosion of fell magic was powerful beyond even what the fallen Titan had imagined. Violent energies enveloped Sargeras, surging through his veins and searing his very soul. His eyes burst in gouts of emerald fire. Fell volcanoes ignited across his once noble form, splitting his skin apart and revealing an endless furnace of blistering hate. Yet despite these horrific physical changes, Sargeras' mind remained locked on his one all-consuming purpose: to prevent the Void Lords from possessing creation. Life itself had to be extinguished. In shattering the prison, Sargeras had ruptured the boundary between the Great Dark and the Twisting Nether. A monstrous celestial maw, limned in a storm of eternal fire, had ripped through the fabric of reality. It would remain a scar on creation, smoldering proof of Sargeras' madness for all eternity. Demons of every shape and size poured into the physical universe from this rift, howling in triumph at their release. Sargeras imbued the ravenous masses with his power, uniting them as one in an inferno of fell magic. Though many demons had previously tapped into the volatile energies of the Nether, none had ever experienced the pure might and rage found in Sargeras' fell. Some of the creatures grew in size and stature. Still others felt new cunning and intelligence unfold in their minds. By this point, Sargeras had learned more about the nature of demons, including how to permanently destroy their spirits. He offered a simple pact in exchange for the demons' newfound power: fight at his command or be extinguished. It was not a difficult choice. To thwart the Void Lords, Sargeras unleashed his new army, his Burning Legion, upon the innumerable worlds of the Great Dark. Never before had the forces of evil been united in such numbers. Sargeras wielded enough power to make disobedience all but unthinkable. None would dream of challenging him, but more importantly, his minions grew to delight in their role as agents of extinction. The Burning Legion fell upon its first world. Though it did not contain a slumbering Titan, it was a world that had been ordered by the Pantheon in ages past. Sargeras' forces incinerated the mortal civilizations that dwelled there, wiping out dozens of sentient species. When the Consteller, whom the Pantheon had charged to oversee the world, arrived, Sargeras himself annihilated the celestial being. Agrimmar was the first to learn of the Consteller's demise. As more news of the Burning Legion's atrocities reached him, he hunted down the demonic army. Agrimmar arrived just in time to witness the Legion scouring yet another world, and he saw the twisted, fire-wreathed being leading it, his mentor and greatest friend, Sargeras. Agrimmar was stunned. He demanded an explanation from Sargeras. The former champion offered none, only declaring that his Burning Legion was the sole means to purify the universe. Anyone who stood against him, Sargeras added, would burn in the fires of his legion as well. Knowing that he could not sway Sargeras with words, Agrimmar challenged his former mentor to single combat. Before the watching eyes of the demon masses, the two greatest warriors the universe had ever known came to blows. Agrimmar soon found himself outmatched. Like all titans, he was uniquely susceptible to fell magic. Sargeras's ferocious assaults shattered Agrimmar's defenses and sent him reeling in agony. In a final desperate counterattack, Agrimmar summoned all the power at his command and struck at Sargeras. Their two blades met, igniting a furious explosion of fell and arcane power. When the torrent of warring engines finally subsided, Sargeras and Agrimmar saw that both of their weapons had been shattered. Heavily wounded by the blast, Agrimmar retreated from the battle and returned to the rest of the Pantheon. Disbelief gripped the other Titans as they learned what had happened. The thought of their most trusted and noble warrior falling to darkness shook their faith to the core. The Pantheon could not fathom how to stop such a threat. Yet they agreed they could not sit idly by. Girded for war, the combined might of the Pantheon confronted Sargeras and his unholy legion near a world named Nihilum. Amonthul called out to Sargeras, pleading with him to abandon his mad burning crusade. He told Sargeras of Azeroth, a fledgling world soul with more potential than any of the Pantheon had ever seen, a being strong enough to defeat the Void Lords in due time. Sargeras listened carefully, but was unmoved. Despite his earlier battle with Sargeras, Agrimmar believed that something noble still lingered deep in the former champion's heart. As a last resort, he laid down his arms and approached the fallen titan. Agrimmar recounted tales of their glorious battles against demons, reminding Sargeras of the sacred oaths they had sworn to protect creation. But Sargeras was set in his ways. Nothing the Pantheon could say, not even his cherished protege could say, would ever change his mind. With a howl of rage and sorrow, Sargeras struck Agrimmar down, his ruined fell blade nearly cleaving the titan in two. Infuriated by this unthinkable murder, the Pantheon launched an all-out assault on Sargeras and his burning legion. Stars withered and died as the battle raged across the cosmos, scarring vast stretches of reality. Nihilum, known thereafter as the Doom World, became warped and twisted by this apocalyptic conflict. The Titans of the Pantheon wielded powers incomprehensible to mortal minds. Yet, even they could not overcome Sargeras' fell-fueled might. The fallen titan decimated the Pantheon's members with fell fire until he had broken their will to fight. To seal their demise, Sargeras summoned a massive fell storm that would consume their bodies and souls alike. Yet just as the furious onslaught of energy washed over the defeated Titans, Norgannon made one last attempt to stave off oblivion. Norgannon bent the raw energies of the universe to his will, weaving a protective shroud around each of the Pantheon's Titan spirits, launching them into the great dark. While the Titans' disembodied souls hurled through the cosmos, Sargeras' fell storm obliterated what remained of their physical forms. Unaware that the Titans' spirits had survived, Sargeras declared the Burning Legion victorious. The Pantheon was no more, and he now had tantalizing clues about a powerful world soul called Azeroth. Yet though Sargeras had learned the name of this nascent Titan, its whereabouts remained a mystery. Nonetheless, without the Pantheon to oppose him, he knew he would find this world soul in time. And he knew he would have to do so before the Void Lords did. The Burning Legion had triumphed over the Pantheon, and Sargeras moved to rally even more demons to his cause. Yet the fight with the Pantheon had exposed a flaw in his seemingly unstoppable army, one that he was determined to remedy. For all of Sargeras' vast power and intellect, he could not direct his entire army at once. Demons were vicious and bloodthirsty, but most lacked strategic thinking. Much of the Legion had fallen needlessly to the Pantheon. Sargeras wanted cunning and tactically minded commanders to join his side, and he had seen a place from which to harvest such servants, a world called Argus. Argus was home to the highly advanced Eridar, a race far more intelligent than any other Sargeras had encountered. The Eridar hungered for knowledge above all else. By attaining it, they believed they could shape the universe into a better and more benevolent place. A triumvirate of leaders ruled over the Eridar, not by might or fear, but by contemplating the great questions of the cosmos and sharing the answers with their people. The mighty Archimonde had a gift for finding the strengths in those around him. His bold demeanor inspired his followers, filling them with the confidence and the courage to face any challenge. Kil'jaeden, the most brilliant of the rulers, was considered a prodigy even among the gifted Eridar. Witty and cunning, he reveled in puzzling out the most confounding mysteries of the cosmos. Last, there was Velen, the spiritual heart of the triumvirate. He stood as a relentless champion of peace, whose wisdom could diffuse any conflict. Individually, each member of the triumvirate would have made an excellent leader. But it was together, with each of their strengths working in synergy, that they elevated their people to heights undreamt of. The Eridar's great cohesion was the ideal solution to the Legion's weakness. Yet to conscript them to his cause, Sargeras would have to corrupt them entirely. In the guise of a radiant and elegant being, he communed with the Eridar Triumvirate. Sargeras played to their desires, promising them knowledge and unimaginable power. He showed them worlds beyond count over which they might hold dominion, primitive places that the Eridar could transform into sanctuaries of peace and intellectual thought. Sargeras vowed to share with the Eridar not only the most obscure secrets of existence, but also the final answer to what he believed was the fundamental flaw in creation. In return, the denizens of Argus would devote themselves to Sargeras' grand work and help him remedy that flaw. The offer awed both Archimonde and Kil'jaeden, who were honored to be a part of this grand undertaking. Velen, however, was not convinced. He sensed something strange about the seemingly beautiful and all-knowing creature who had appeared to them. Velen meditated using an ancient artifact gifted to his race by the holy Nauru long before his time, the Adamal crystal. Through the enchanted relic, he received a horrific vision of the Eridar's future if they sided with Sargeras. They would become horribly disfigured, transformed into demonic beings of depthless evil. Velen warned his brothers of what he had seen, but they dismissed his insights and made it clear they intended to accept Sargeras' offer. Fearing that Archimonde and Kil'jaeden would kill him if he continued to dissent, Velen feigned acceptance. Though he and Kil'jaeden were particularly close friends, Velen didn't believe he could trust their bond to prevail over Sargeras' enticing promises. Velen despaired at the fate of his people. In this moment of desperation, the same beings who had granted him his vision of the Eridar's downfall reached out to him. One of the Nauru, Kior, contacted the Eridar leader and offered to shepherd him and his closest allies to safety. Filled with renewed hope, Velen sought out other Eridar whom he believed he could trust. As Sargeras arrived on Argus to corrupt the unsuspecting Eridar, Velen and his followers made their daring escape. They gathered aboard a massive Nauru dimensional fortress known as the Jinadar and fled their homeworld forever. From that day forward, Velen and his followers would be known as the Draenei, or Exiled Ones. On Argus, Sargeras bent the other Eridar to his unholy will. Fanatical fell whisperings surged through the minds of the world's inhabitants, drowning out their ability to reason. Sargeras also infused the Eridar with fell energies, twisting their forms to resemble hideous demons. Sargeras found quick use for his new fell-corrupted converts. The Eridar settled in as commanders within the Burning Legion. Kil'jaeden and Archimonde would stand as the most gifted and powerful among them. Sargeras molded Kil'jaeden's innate cunning and intellect to suit the Legion's designs. Known thereafter as the Deceiver, Kil'jaeden was charged with using his wits to beguile the mortal civilizations of the physical universe and transform them into agents of the Burning Legion. Sargeras also saw Archimonde's talents in motivating people as an invaluable tool to strengthen the Burning Crusade. Archimonde, henceforth known as the Defiler, would use his powerful will to drive the demonic masses to acts of extreme violence and barbarism. He would draw out and temper the furious strength in all those who served under him, remaking them into weapons of annihilation. Under the Eredar's leadership, the ranks of the Burning Legion swelled with new demonic races, gathered from the Twisting Nether and the worlds of the Great Dark. Archimonde empowered the monstrous Pit Lords and conscripted them to serve as living siege engines. They would inspire dread in all those they faced. The Moar, a highly resourceful and industrious race of demons, became the Legion's armorers. They would forge fel-infused weaponry and constructs to besiege the worlds of the cosmos. Kil'jaeden also brought in the devious succubi to infiltrate prospective worlds for conquest and gather intelligence about their civilizations. The brutal Doomguard, demon warriors of unsurpassed strength and cruelty, fought as the Legion's shock troops. The zealous Shavara became the Legion's foremost mystics and advisors. They fostered a fanatical loyalty to Sargeras. These wicked creatures, among many others, bolstered the might of the Burning Legion. Pleased with his burgeoning forces, Sargeras launched the demons into the Great Dark, renewing his burning crusade against creation. In the ages to come, the Legion would scour countless other worlds and civilizations from existence.